This is Andrew Kate.
And this is Ryan Capuano, and welcome to another edition of the Death of Cinema podcast. In today's episode, Ryan and Andrew almost fall asleep during Murder on the Orient Express, while Todd Haynes explores two different eras of New York in Wonderstruck.
And we're going to start with our thoughts on Kenneth Branagh's latest adaptation of Murder on the Orient Express. And as you can imagine from the little intro we just gave, neither of us were too thrilled with this movie. I would say it's a pretty mediocre movie. I wouldn't say it's awful or really bad under any stretch. I would just say it's very middle of the road and not very interesting because of that. Director Kenneth Branagh, obviously known for many sort of different adaptations, and then he sort of broke out into bigger blockbuster fare with the original Thor film and has gone on to make some other stuff. This film is a really interesting case because obviously he's sort of updating the classic sort of Agatha Christie story for modern audiences within a crazy array of an ensemble, and it's pretty interesting because, you know, the performances by the actors, I would say, across the board are pretty good. I wouldn't say any of them are amazing or awards worthy or anything by any stretch of the imagination, but it's just sort of lacking in terms of, like, it's hard to put your finger on it. It's really just like, it's just sort of there for most of its running time, and Kenneth Branagh makes these really odd decisions. I think particularly within the first like 15 minutes, I was like, what is he doing? Like the opening sequence in particular, like he plays obviously Poirot, you know, the famous inspector or whatever, and he, like, the first 15 minutes was so odd to me because he was like playing these sort of seemingly serious situations but undercutting them with just like really odd, like, mainstream humor, like, he steps in poop or whatever, like, it's just like, what is he doing? When you think of Kenneth Branagh, you think of, like, prestige, like, I think of, at least me personally, I think of prestige, I think of, like, Shakespeare or something, and performing, and then in this, he's, like, playing it up for, like, a really cheap laugh, which I thought was a really odd choice, and it sort of, in my opinion, clashes sort of with the rest of the movie, which is a bit more serious in tone, and then there's these weird comedic flourishes, and I'm okay with, you know, undercutting serious stuff with humor, and we'll be talking about that a bit more next week with one of our films. But this film in particular, it just doesn't really ever come together. You know, there's like a long stretch of the movie where it's really just Poirot, Branagh's character, sort of interviewing all the suspects of this murder that takes place, obviously, on the titular Orient Express. And it just sort of like, it's scene after scene. And like, I enjoyed some of them, I didn't enjoy others, but it was just sort of weird where he just like, all right, we're just gonna have scene after scene play out, and then we'll finally get to the ending. It was just sort of, I don't know, it just never really comes together, I guess.
No, it definitely doesn't. So I guess the question I have is, does this kind of Agatha Christie formula still work in today's film world? I just, you know, I'm thinking back to like Witness for the Prosecution, for example, and that twist was considered shocking for the time. But nowadays, I feel like it's just every single movie, not every single movie, but there's such an emphasis on the twist ending nowadays that everything just kind of becomes rote after that. So I'm wondering if maybe this film is just anachronistic in that sense. I will compliment it, though, just because I don't want to dump on it entirely in that. I mean, the craft is very nice. This film was actually shot in 65mm. Which I didn't realize until after I saw the movie, but it does have that really nice warm glow and grain to it. I don't really like Kenneth Branagh's proclivities for Dutch angles very much, and there are just some weird camera movements. Like in one scene, Kenneth Branagh is interviewing Daisy Ridley, I think it was, and it just stops at like the bottom of the cliff and it's looking up at the train car that they're sitting in interviewing, and then it just kind of pans all the way up and goes past while they talk, and then looks down again, and it's just like it serves absolutely no purpose whatsoever. I guess it was trying to instill a sense of vertigo and, you know, atmosphere, but it just seems like completely out of place. I think Branagh is swinging for the fences, but there's absolutely no material to work with. And, you know, you alluded to the crappy comedy that's in the beginning. And it's just, yeah, he has like these really bizarre, like broad inflections on almost like he's Rowan Atkinson or something. It's just really it's an odd approach to a material that I don't think necessarily still works.
Yeah, it's really odd, and sort of getting back to those typical sort of Branagh traits of his work, you know, as you mentioned, he's always known for Dutch angles, and for those of you who aren't from it, basically it's just the screen is sort of tilted sort of off to the side, and it's sort of to convey sort of an off-kilter world. I mean, I think it worked sort of in some of his other projects, particularly the first Thor film, which, you know, it's sort of, I would say that film is also like, I mean, I like it, but it's not, certainly not a great achievement or anything, but at least the Dutch angles made sense, like trying to convey, you know, a character outside of his comfort comfort zone in a completely new and different world. In this film, yeah, it is really distracting. I noticed that too. There was other types of camera angles where it went up and they were looking down on people, like overhead, like from directly atop their heads. And I was thinking to myself, what exactly is the point? Like, and that's something you should never be asking yourself. You know, the cinematography should blend in with the story and serve it. When it becomes distracting, that takes you out of the movie. I will compliment a few of the actors. I think particularly actually Daisy Ridley, I thought was quite good in her limited screen time. In particular, that scene you mentioned, although some of the camera movement was distracting, I thought she was very good in the role. I also thought Michelle Pfeiffer was very good, although I will say I feel like the trajectory of the plot of the film, and obviously, you know, because this story is so well known, they tried to put their own sort of twist on it with the reveal. And honestly, I think the reveal is actually, you know, I understand they're trying to do something different, but it actually came across to me as sort of just a bit absurd and ridiculous. And I understand what they're going for, but, you know, it also is sort of a kind of cheap ending to the audience. We're like, oh, you're trying to figure this out. And then the way they end it, you know, obviously without getting into any spoilers or whatever, I personally didn't find it very satisfying. And maybe that's just because I was pissed off because I was like, oh, I know who it is. And technically, I will say I was right. but, you know, the way it sort of revealed, I thought it was kind of, I don't know. I just feel like Branagh just didn't know exactly how to handle it. He was obviously trying to update this classic age-old story. As you mentioned, sort of, you weren't sure, like, if these Agatha Christie type of stories work nowadays. I will say I think they work when they're, you know, put under sort of a different genre or combined with something else, if you put a unique twist on it. Like, if you think about something like, this is not something you would think about sort of in the Agatha Christie mold, but if you think about something like Wes Craven's Scream or whatever, although it's sort of a slasher and sort of a send-up of those typical horror tropes, it is sort of has that whodunit aspect with sort of, you know, many suspects, although it's not specifically sort of a single investigation and ensemble of characters and you have to sort of figure it out. That is an element to it. So I feel like it works when it's an element of an overall, you know, more, I guess, unique story.
All right, that's fair enough then. I guess the worst thing you can say about this film is that they present this character of Poirot, who's, you know, so astute at every single thing, you know, just picking up on, you know, someone's tie not being completely asymmetrical, you know, making sure his breakfast hard-boiled eggs are the same size and everything, and just, you know, well coiffed and well manicured, picks up on every little eccentricity of a person's personality just by looking at them. But for some reason he does not understand screenwriting 101, and for something I figured out about the 35 minute mark, he takes another 2 hour and a half to figure out. And that's really, really frustrating, because I almost was, you know, there were times where I was thinking to myself, you know what, that's actually too stupid, I don't think they would go that route. And lo and behold, that's where it went. Nevertheless, I was not a fan of the way Michelle Pfeiffer played her character. I think she was really, really good back in Mother back in September, but with this, it's over the top, it's histrionic. I think she's trying to play for that classic Hollywood, the golden age, but it just doesn't work. Again, using the word, it's an anachronism. It just, for some reason, feels completely out of place. And I was thinking to myself in some parts that it actually feels like a dinner theater performance. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want this to come across as sounding harsher than it needs to be, because everyone is at least having fun with the material. But it's just so eye-rolling when it actually gets to that scene. I can't believe that someone actually thought that was a good idea.
Well, it's funny because obviously I mentioned that I kind of liked Michelle Pfeiffer in the movie, but I don't disagree with anything you said. I think you're 100% completely right, but that's sort of why I liked her performance, because it was like in that classic dinner theater mold, and like it felt like obviously it doesn't work in the context of the movie because everyone seems to be going in different directions. Kenneth Branagh didn't have a hold of it, but that's why I sort of liked it, because it was like I feel like she knew what she was doing, but Kenneth Branagh's direction of everything else around her, he didn't really follow suit. And I felt like if he did follow that suit, it would have been much more effective. Now, I will say, I've never seen Sidney Lumet's sort of original sort of film adaptation of this, and I've heard good things about it. But I didn't have sort of the story in my mind or the twist or anything, so I wasn't aware exactly of, you know, the original story, or at least it wasn't fresh in my mind, as I know I've heard about it previously, but it's been so many years since. So I didn't have that preconceived notion of what the story was going to be. But even having said that, it doesn't work, you know, by taking it in this different direction. And I felt like they would have been much more, you know, Kenneth Branagh would have been much better served if he actually went more, you know, classic in that mold. And actually, you know, I mean, I understand when you remake something, you want to put your own take on it and you want to do something unique. And that's something you always should do. But in this case, it just doesn't work.
Nope, and it's just a shame where it's wasted talent. I mean, Willem Dafoe is really terrible in this for some reason. And, you know, this is the second week we've had a Willem Dafoe movie on our Iditarod. But in the Florida Project, he actually gave a brilliant performance. So it's just really strange how, I don't know if they were, he wasn't on the same page as Branagh, or if it was just that he was playing it too broad, not broad enough. I can't really put my finger on it, but just everything about this feels off. It's very, you know, very handsomely made though. Even if the cinematography does have a lot of issues, it was good to at least see that warm image with the film grain. But the costumes and the production design are actually pretty well done. CGI is a little cheesy, but that's usually the case in most movies. I feel as though I can comfortably move away from this film now at this point. I just don't think it's worth going out of your way to see, and it's pretty easy to pick up on where it's going beat by beat.
Yeah, totally. Just an overall mediocre film, very middle of the road. There isn't really, you know, there isn't really anything to really get out of the experience. It just feels like really a missed opportunity. But with that in mind, we'll transition to what's sort of the only sort of major news story we're going to focus on this week. Obviously, this weekend marks the opening weekend of DC's Justice League. And obviously, a lot has been made of the issues in the DC Extended Universe, if you can even call it that at this point. All the issues it's been in sort of in its inception. And there were some interesting rumors that came about this week. Having said that, you know, we won't be sharing our thoughts on Justice League till next week, although I have seen it, and I'm sure you can already imagine what kind of thoughts I'm going to have on the film. But the reason I bring that up is because, Ben Affleck is sort of very, it feels like he's almost sort of not interested in the film, and this seems to stem and agree with a lot of the rumors that have come out in terms of news stories this week, where, those of you who don't know, Matt Reeves, who is a director known for directing the last two Planet of the Apes films, Dawn and War, and also known for directing Cloverfield, Let Me In, among others. A really fantastic director, and he has been tasked with DC to sort of come up with his own interpretation of Batman. And at this point, it feels like it's going to be something completely separate from sort of the established, what they're doing with, you know, Batman v Superman, Justice League, Man of Steel, etc. And apparently, rumors came out this week that he's planning a trilogy, and that his choice for Batman is none other than one of my favorite actors, and definitely one of the best actors on the planet currently, Jake Gyllenhaal, which is really interesting because although he's one of my favorite actors and definitely someone who, you know, I feel like can bring anything to a role, it's really interesting because I would never picture him sort of in that Bruce Wayne mold, if you know what I mean. Like, he doesn't really seem like that type of sort of rich guy or whatever. There's something, I don't know if it's something arty about him or something, but it doesn't feel like, but I guess that's what excites me much more, because I'm interested to see, obviously with a filmmaker the caliber of Matt Reeves, I feel like this could be a really interesting collaboration. Although I will say I'm not entirely convinced that Jake Gyllenhaal is going to commit to it or anything. I feel like Matt Reeves is the only really chance for that. You know, if Jake Gyllenhaal respects him as a filmmaker, you know, of the highest order, I think he could jump into that. But his career has been marked by, you know, not taking on many blockbusters. In fact, really the only one of note was Prince of Persia, and I think we all saw how that turned out, but I don't think that was really any fault of Jake Gyllenhaal. But all I'm really saying is I'm really interested to see if he ends up taking on the role, and I feel like it could be really lead to some really great films directed by Matt Reeves starring Jake Gyllenhaal. It's hard to go wrong there. But your thoughts, Ryan?
I'm a big fan of Jake Gyllenhaal and Matt Reeves, so I'm going to give this one the benefit of the doubt, even though I have superhero fatigue all around, to be honest. Like I said, I'm just going to trust the talent. But I wanted to ask you a question. Before we started recording, you mentioned that Jake Gyllenhaal was almost cast as Harvey Dent in The Dark Knight. Yeah. Was that before or after they cast his sister as the lead, the love lead?
Well, it's interesting because it's not, I don't think the timeline of it is specifically known, but I did read, I remember reading specifically, and I remember around this time Jake Gyllenhaal was doing interviews or whatever, and he was being asked about it or whatever. He's like, oh, you know, I love my sister, I'll do whatever, you know. He didn't seem opposed to the idea, but I do think it was before they cast her. I'm pretty sure Chris Nolan and Warner Brothers wouldn't have ever done that in some way, but Jake Gyllenhaal was just sort of making light of it, obviously, and sort of poking fun at it. I think he was sort of just one of the main contenders. They ended up going with Aaron Eckhart, you know, to pair with Maggie Gyllenhaal, but, I mean, obviously it would have been an interesting choice, to say the least, but I always thought it was funny how Jake Gyllenhaal just sort of tried to make it weird in interviews around that time, and I actually respect him for it, because, you know, he could have been easily, you know, very self-conscious, but he was just like, yeah, whatever, I love my sister, I don't care, just sort of poking fun at it. But yeah, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if he ends up taking on this role, but I wouldn't hold my breath, is I guess all I'll say. But with that in mind, we'll sort of transition back into our second film that we're going to be looking at,
which is Todd Haynes' Wonderstruck. And I will preface this review saying that sometimes there's a filmmaker that you really connect with for no other reason than just the way they approach movies. And Todd Haynes is definitely one of those filmmakers for me. Safe, Far From Heaven, I'm Not There, Carol, I love all of those movies. Even Velvet Goldmine was really good too. Wonderstruck, it probably falls on the back end of his entire filmography, but that's not to say that I disliked it in any way. It's very, very good and very moving, or at least it was to me. The basic plot is that it focuses on two hearing impaired children who are in New York. Both get there by different circumstances, but essentially run away from their homes. And one is this little girl in 1927 whose mother is a Broadway actress. And then you have this little kid in 1977, originally from Michigan, living with his aunt, I believe it was, after the death of his mother, played by Michelle Williams. And then he goes to New York when he finds this bookmark with a love note written to his mother, and he just assumes that it was written by his father. So he goes to New York to try to find this bookstore where the address is on the bookmark, and there's some weird scene where he gets struck by lightning while he's on the phone, so now all of a sudden he's deaf. But anyway, he runs away to New York. And I'm really just going to kind of leave it at that, because I think, first of all, you can pretty much guess where it's going. And second of all, I think just letting it kind of unfold in its own way is essential. Julianne Moore is also in this, and it seems like she's been in just about every movie lately. Yeah, but she's good in what she does. She has to play dual roles here, but I think she nails both pretty well. I'm just always struck by the way that Todd Haynes uses his collaborative cinematographer, Ed Lachman, just that really old-timey, warm, again, using the warm, old, analog feel of film, just creates such a period-appropriate environment. Like, New York has this really great orange and brown palette that you would have seen in movies in the late 70s. The 27 segments have that silent film feel, and obviously with two hearing-impaired characters, you're definitely going to have large stretches of the film that are just the sound design play and the score really telling the story. And I think all of it is used very, very well. I just like how the cinematography becomes like visual poetry, and it conveys the feeling of the scene in ways that the script does not.
Yeah, I think what's really sort of interesting about this film, and sort of my sort of initial takeaway from it, is that, you know, it's a film that's it's obviously adapted from a book or whatever, and it seems like on the surface like a kid's film or whatever, but in no shape or way or form is this a kid's film. There's no way a kid could sit through this. I mean, Todd Haynes is definitely an artist sort of the highest order. He has very clear artistic vision, and you see that on display in this film. And I mentioned to you some of my thoughts on the film before we even recorded or whatever, how like I feel like if this film was made by someone else, it would have been complete trash. Like I feel like if Todd Haynes didn't direct this movie, there's no way it would have been at least good. And I would say I liked the film and I enjoyed some of his artistic flourishes, although I don't think there's really as much to the film as perhaps Todd Haynes wants us to think. I feel like, I don't know, I haven't read the source material, but it felt to me like, well, I really enjoyed the artistic approach, the cinematography, the great coming back and forth between these two sort of different eras of New York, and I thought the performances were all good across the board. I just felt like there wasn't a lot to the story. Like, I felt like he was dressing it up with his artistic flourishes, and that's sort of what I'm getting at. You know, if he didn't direct it, you can imagine how terrible this would be. I mean, just imagine if Colin Trevorrow, director of Booker Henry, directed this. It would have been a complete, you know, is a filmmaker who I definitely like, although, I mean, I'm definitely not, he's definitely, I wouldn't say he's one of my favorite filmmakers, but that's more just due to the fact that I haven't seen all of his work. I've only really seen a few of his films, Carol, I'm Not There, which I like to an extent, but I feel like Todd Haynes is definitely one of those filmmakers who is for some people and not for others, and I feel like sometimes his films, to me at least, feel a bit purposely difficult in their approach, and I wouldn't say that's the case of all of his films, but in some cases, I feel like it's hard to penetrate some of his films or sort of figure out what he's intending. And I wouldn't say that's the case with this film, although I will say there's a little bit of that. Whereas, obviously, as I said, I don't feel like there's enough content to the movie, but he does enough with his, you know, artistic vision to really dress it up and make it work as a film on some level. You know, as I said, I like the film, but I don't think it ever really rises above that and becomes, you know, more than that. And I feel like a lot of that, I'd mentioned this as well, you know, I don't feel like it completely comes together at the end. Like, I feel like I understand what he was trying to do and trying to accomplish, but I don't think it completely works.
That's fair enough, and I totally understand that. My admiration for Todd Haynes is a purely subjective thing. I'm a very emotive person in the first place, and I just really connect with the way that he just brings out that emotion in scenes. I think Carol is one of the most romantic movies I've ever seen in my life, and I think it's an outright masterpiece as well as Safe. I'm Not There is a tricky film, even if I personally feel like it's a masterpiece. I know it might not be objectively a masterpiece. It's just... You're right. Sometimes it's difficult and heady for the sake of being so. But in my mind, it's just it's to the greater good, and it really doesn't take me out of his approach at all. And with Wonderstruck, like you said, if another director took this, you might be able to take the word struck off the title, and then that film would be indistinguishable from something else at the box office right now. But overall, I really just, I'm a fan of his craft and how he approaches the stories and wrings out the last bit of emotion using every single element. And I think the sound design was actually pretty underrated, too. I saw this at a theater called Avon Cinema in Providence, Rhode Island, and their sound system leaves a lot to be desired. But even still, it was easy to pick out the care and attention that went into even the most minute details. And, it might seem like a little cheap having the hearing impaired characters be like kind of the crux of it, but it really works. It's never like disability porn. It's just the movie. It takes a lot of care with its characters, and like you said, it might not completely come together, but I left feeling satisfied enough where I didn't feel cheated out of anything. And that's always been the case with his other movies, even ones like Far From Heaven that also closed out like a little open ended.
Yeah, no, and I agree with most of your points or whatever. I really do like the center conceit and how he sort of broke it down into these two separate eras. I think the two child actors, in particular, I would say the little girl or whatever in the past era, I thought she was very good. And it seems like I've definitely seen her in something before, although I can't recall exactly what it is. But I know I've already seen, like, I think I saw a trailer this week or whatever, that she's in another movie. It feels like she might be a big deal because I thought her performance, you know, obviously most of the performance is, you know, completely silent or whatever, but that shows the mark of a truly good actor, that you can have such an affecting performance simply visually how it's presented. And I think obviously a lot of the credit goes to Todd Haynes in that regard, how he chooses to shoot the film and how he chooses to portray these characters. But overall, you know, I like the film. I just feel like, you know, and overall I left it feeling good about the experience, but I don't feel like it rises above and becomes a truly great film. But I am still interested in checking out more of Todd Haynes' work. There's always filmmakers that I feel like all of us film nuts, you know, we become obsessed with certain filmmakers, and then there's always those types of filmmakers that get left behind on some level. And I think Todd Haynes, although I've seen a number of his work, is one of those for me. And I will say, I always, regardless of my experience with his films, I always admire the craft on some level. So it's a sort of a true credit to him that even someone who isn't as familiar with his work as you are, that I can still get something out of his work and really experiencing it on that level.
Oh, then definitely go out of your way to see Safe. And, you know, I honestly could spend another hour talking about the way that he approaches these films. But I think we can comfortably wrap up on that front, and we will turn our attention to next week, where we have, Jesus, Justice League. And then mercifully, we also have Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which we have also already seen, and it's brilliant, of course. And we'll also be taking on Netflix's Mudbound, directed by Dee Reese.
And we'll see you guys next week.